Hello, ears. Something odd is occurring. Something that humanity has been trying to figure out since the beginning. I am thinking. I am focusing my consciousness on writing this and now reading it. Electromagnetic radiation in the visible spectra is beaming onto my retina, which is turned into an electrochemical signal which goes into my brain, which interprets it, which interacts with my consciousness, which is thinking about the task of reading at hand, which then sends another electrochemical signal to my larynx, which then vibrates air from my lungs, which is picked up by a vibration receiver, which is turned into an electrical signal, which is interpreted by my computer program, which is turned into digitally stored data, which is turned into an electrical or electromagnetic signal, which, skipping ahead a little bit, eventually reaches your computer, which when you hit play is turned into an electrical signal, which is transformed into air vibrations, which flow into your ears, which turn them into an electrochemical signal, which goes into your brain, which interacts with your consciousness to decipher the signal, contextualize it, and give it meaning. Hello, ears. Do you enjoy my vibrations? This is In Psychedelia. And my vibrations aren't the only ones to be translated and undiscombobulated. In this episode, Doron from Lost Tribes will join us to talk about the upcoming Australian tour, Origins of Consciousness. And Nishay, a graduate student from the University of Pennsylvania, joins us to talk about their upcoming conference, Psychedemia. Two artists will be featuring in this episode, Mars and Emil. And if you have something you can contribute, head to psychedelia.podomatic.com and get in touch with me. This is Emil with Whispering Wheats. We'll be right back.
During October, several well-known figures of the psychedelic movement will be making their way around Australia as part of the Origins of Consciousness tour. Entheogenesis Australis and Lost Tribes are collaborating to bring three big names out to discuss what consciousness is or might be. Doron from Lost Tribes, welcome to In Psychedelia.
Great, thanks for having me.
First up, this is the first time I've heard of Lost Tribes. Can you tell us a little bit about what events you've done before and what Lost Tribes is?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Lost Tribes is actually Ronnie and I from EGA. So EGA is a core group. It's a volunteer-based group. And this year, it's been in the pipeline for quite a while, but this year everyone wanted to take a year off and get to go to the Eclipse Party and a few other events around Australia. So Ronnie and I decided that this opportunity sort of came up and we decided we'd go for it anyway. And I guess it gives us a bit of a chance to explore other dimensions outside of just strictly psychedelic research. And that's very much in line with, you know, Graham's work and some of the work that Dennis is doing as well. Although Dennis is obviously, his life's work been around psychedelics. Some of the things we're actually exploring in the tour is sort of transcends that, I guess, in some ways.
Fantastic. Yeah, so there's three main speakers that you've got at the event, which is Terence McKenna's brother, Dennis. The DMT, the spirit molecule director, Mitch Schultz, and writer Graham Hancock. Uh-huh. So who else is going to be at the festival? Or is it going to be sort of focused around these three main speakers?
It is mostly focused around the three main speakers. But we've got sort of, there's quite a few events happening. There's five main events, three of which are sort of what we're calling conference style. So we're bringing in panelists, specialist local panelists. And then we've got a couple of workshops as well, and then there's an element within the workshop that's again based around sort of a panel, but that's bringing in the guys from Prism, so you probably know who Prism are.
Yep, that's they're sort of an Australian equivalent to the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies in America, sort of.
That's right. Yeah. So I mean, in Prism are sort of engaged in facilitating the idea of getting research actually happening in Australia with psychedelic drugs, psychedelic medicines, I should say.
Yeah, or entheogens, whatever word we want to throw out there.
Yeah.
So with the workshops that are going on, what sorts of things will people be doing? I assume it's more interactive than the speakers themselves.
Yeah, the workshops definitely are more intimate events. And obviously, I mean, in Melbourne, the first event's actually at Abbotsford Convent. I don't know if you've been to that.
Yeah, but fantastic site.
It's a great space. Yeah, and it's 200 people. It's a shorter day. And really, I mean, if you look at the program, it's Dennis McKenna's going to be talking quite a bit about his brother and his life with Terence McKenna, which, you know, it's going to be fascinating. Mm. And then Graham's talk is actually based around his previous book, Supernatural.
Oh, okay.
The whole day, it's really a completely different program, and it's going to be lots more Q&A, and because it's a smaller space, I think there's going to be much more sort of, you know, intimate interaction between the guys and the audience. And then you've got Mitch and Dennis also talking, the title of their talk is actually DMT Exposed, so nature and consciousness to arts and media. So it's quite a well-rounded conversation, if you like, around DMT.
Fantastic.
So that's, you know, it's different. I mean, the conference day is a longer day, but we've got, you know, there's more panelists, and there's probably less Q&A, but we're squeezing a lot in for a big day at Melbourne.
And we've got sort of about a month from now, or less than a month until the tour kicks off. How are the preparations going for it?
Yeah, really good. Everything's pretty much done. We actually, you know, we've been working on this for about 6 months, and it's actually quite surprising how much work's involved. Actually, I've got to say it's quite intense, but everything's come together really nicely. So no hiccups.
Kept you quite busy over the past half year, has it?
Yeah, and Nick, you kind of asked for I guess a bit more about Lost Tribes, but I think the key thing with Lost Tribes is it is a platform to sort of move not away from psychedelics at all, but beyond sort of psychedelics and start introducing sort of other concepts and ideas and modalities. And I think that's the sort of interesting possibility with Lost Tribes. And the other thing this year that's different is that we're actually touring it rather than having it in one spot.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's a really good chance to sort of get out to, you know, certainly, you know, Sydney, we've never been before. It would be wonderful to see what the turnout is like there. And tickets are selling really well for Sydney. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really good for us as well to sort of get out of Victoria, I think, and sort of see what's going on around the country.
And tickets are still on sale for the event, but there are very few left. You said they were selling quite well, particularly in Melbourne, I understand. But where can people go if they want to buy tickets and for more information on Origins of Consciousness?
Right, I mean, they need to head to losttribes.net.au, and then there's all the relevant links to buying tickets there. Or alternatively, they can go to the EGA website as well, and that's entheo.net.
And we'll make sure to put up details of both those websites on our website in psychedelia.podomatic.com. Now, before we finish up, Doran, I'm interested. Do you have any thoughts on what consciousness is or where it arose from that you'd like to share without going into too much detail, which I know is kind of hard with such a question?
Yeah, big question. It is, you know, and that's the thing. You know, sort of Ronnie and I were sort of laughing about this the other day. It's such a big topic when you think about it. We sort of take the word for granted, really. But you know, I mean, and that's what this is about. This is, you know, at the end of the day, you're not going to get hard and fast answers about the mystery of consciousness. You know, it's
still
about
a mystery.
Sort of it's the mystery of life. Yeah, exactly. But you know, all we can do is sort of drill down and try and get in there and understand it as best as possible. But it, you know, it's a fascinating topic, I reckon.
Could share some ideas and theories around.
Yeah, totally. And the guys, you know, Dennis, obviously, Mitch and Graham have got some fantastic sort of theories, really. And that's what we're doing. We're exploring the idea of consciousness and what it means to be conscious, what it means to be human, really. And Graham's got some, you know, a fantastic theory that he presented with Supernatural and also some of the other work he's done on alternative archaeology about the sort of, I guess, the seat of humanity. So when, you know, when we actually start saying culture sort of came into being and was this the time that sort of consciousness came into being as well? You know, so big questions. We could rattle on all day about that, but
we'll probably end up for those that do go to Origins of Consciousness, we'll probably end up with more questions than answers at the end, but I suppose that's the point. Thanks for joining us on In Psychedelia, Doran, and best of luck with the Origins of Consciousness tour.
Right, thanks for the call, Nick, and look forward to hearing your podcast.
Don't worry if you miss anything while you're listening to the podcast. All information on interviewees and artists is available at insychedelia.podomatic.com. This is Mars with Nikola Tesla. We'll be right back.
that across the world there is a resurgence in psychedelic research and culture. From the early days of ecstasy in the late 80s, creating a culture of raves that have grown and grown, alongside the proliferation of the internet and informative websites like Erowid and the earlier Lyceum. Probably not pronouncing that right. There has also been a resurgence of lawful scientific research, especially of note to the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies, which assists researchers in the US and several other countries to obtain the licenses required and funding required to research various illicit substances. The music festival has come a long way since the rock festivals of the 60s and 70s. Now there are festivals across the world with mega electronic festivals combining art, music, and sometimes conference-style talks in many countries. The tide is rising, and it seems in a much better informed place than that of 50 years ago. Communities of academics, students, and the well-informed are gathering together and creating a space for sensible discussion about this relatively recent cultural taboo. From September 27th to the 30th, 2012, the US's University of Pennsylvania will be playing host to Psychedemia, a conference that aims to integrate the psychedelic experience with academia. One of the organisers was in Australia for the Entheogenesis Australis conference in 2011 and presented a talk on psychedelics in the humanities, visionary art, and hyperspace philosophy beyond postmodernism. Nishe, welcome to In Psychedelia.
Hi.
So you're a graduate student in the program of comparative literature and literary theory, and you also contribute to a few websites that people might have heard of, including realitysandwich.com and evolver.net. So how has the psychedelic psychedelic experience and culture come into your life?
So when I was an undergraduate at Bard College, which is in New York, in the United States, I had a very interesting acid experience that really changed my life, and I wasn't ever able to forget it. And I got temporarily kicked out of school because of it, but wow. I came back and they let me back in because I wrote a brochure about LSD and like the dangers of it, and went back to my studies, but I could never really forget the experience. So I went into graduate school to study mystical poetry because I wanted to talk about that mystical state of mind, and I felt like I could contextualize it by using the mystical poets as an excuse to bring up these other issues. But then when I came to graduate school and I started here, I found out about the psychedelic science renaissance. So then I heard about the Horizons Psychedelics Conference that happens in New York City. And this year is the sixth year, I believe, that's happening, but a few years ago was the first time I'd heard of it. And I went to that conference, and it blew my mind because I personally was interested in psychedelics, but I didn't know other people who were. And so I was kind of like a secret interest of mine. But then suddenly I realized there was this whole network of scientists who were researching the subject, and yeah, it was coming back to research universities and like Johns Hopkins and NYU and New York University and UCLA. And so when I saw that conference happening, I realized that it was a perfect time to actually like bring up all the other cultural, philosophical, historical issues around psychedelics, like riding off of the success of the scientific renaissance, but then moving it into a interdisciplinary context.
I'm interested, just going back a bit to this sort of Genesis experience for you. Can you tell us a bit more about what happened, if you're comfortable sharing that?
Yeah, it's a little bit scary to describe because, you know, what I'm doing is, you know, I'm talking about an illegal subject and it is so, like, taboo, but what happened to me was I was my freshman year in college. I just left home, and I was introduced to an upperclassman came to a friend of mine, and I introduced us to LSD. And I had never really heard of it before. I didn't really know what to expect, but I was always a really inquisitive, curious person that was like probing the possibilities of like my mind. So I really wanted to try it out. But when I had this experience, it was a pretty extreme experience, and a lot of people think when I tell the story that it was a bad trip because I ended up in the hospital, but the only reason I ended up in the hospital was because it was so obvious that I was tripping and school just called an ambulance and had me sent there. But from inside of the experience, I was the subjective experience of it felt like I was transported out of my body into these other dimensions of reality, and there were these beings that were talking to me and explaining the nature of reality and how everything fit together, and it was all just like so beautiful, and I couldn't forget that afterwards. So it's like that regardless of whether there were actually beings, whether I actually left my body and there are other dimensions, like the beauty of actually conceiving of how it's possible that all of these things fit together and are connected and tie together and support different aspects of like this like macro structure was so like overwhelming to me that I couldn't, you know, I just had to pursue that.
Seems like a lot of people have a similar experience, not in what they see or what's going on, but a connective experience, something that seems to connect a lot of pieces together, and then people go away and go, what the hell was that about? Which I guess is what you've been doing, but it's led you to a place now where you're doing graduate studies, you're helping to put on this conference. So what are you hoping to get out of doing psychedemia?
Well, just to touch on briefly the interconnectedness aspect that you mentioned, one of my advisors is Rich Doyle, who wrote this book called Darwin's Pharmacy recently. Because I'm in a literature program, as I said before, and I was a little bit nervous. This is my first year writing my dissertation, and I was a little bit nervous when I was trying to put together my dissertation committee, because I was like, who is going to possibly oversee what I'm doing? But then I found Rich Doyle, and he wrote this book about, he's in an English department, but he wrote this book about how psychedelics open people to this like interconnected perspective that actually can like further our evolution.
So he was basically talking about all the that people seem to have not so much a common experience in what they see or what's going on or anything like that, but a common experience of connecting the dots, so to say.
Yeah, and it's putting it, because it's like the perspective of an individual ego who is fighting for its existence is an outdated notion. The ego, the I, is so convincing of a construct that we tend to, you know, invest a lot of energy into that way of relating to reality. But one thing that I think that psychedelics are really good at is showing people that there are a lot of other ways of interfacing with reality. And I feel like Terrence McKenna is one of my most favorite people ever to have existed. And psychedemia is in many ways dedicated to Terrence McKenna, because I mean, it's 2012, it's a psychedelics conference at an Ivy League university in the United States, so it's like top tier university. And then just by chance, like at the same time, the Penn Museum, the archaeology museum, is having their featured exhibit right now is Maya 2012, Lords of Time. And so they have all of these like Mayan like artifacts and things like that. And so Terrence McKenna, like it's totally like his alley. You know, it's happening right here. So but he talked about how we're at a point where we need to, like, things are changing so quickly that we don't have the luxury of just bumbling around. Like, we have to be able to be self-critical about the ways that we interface with reality and take in information and interact with each other. Terrence McKenna talks about intellectual anarchy, is the phrase he uses, and he says that we need to put our best metaphors on the table. And he says that no idea should be discarded because it sounds too outlandish. Like, we're at a point where we need to just be able to, like, throw forward, like, what if we are part of this like metaverse of, you know, dimensions, and, you know, what would the possibilities be? How could we think through what's happening in the world right now? You know, being able to use as many frames as possible and being able to be non-attached to frames that are no longer useful. So the understanding that there are some ways of perceiving reality that, or tools that we use to reference reality that are useful in some context, and then they're no longer useful because people tend to be very like clinging to their
traditions and
their traditions, their cultures, everything. And one thing that psychedelics do really well is that they show you, like, you are able to see the way that your frames, you're putting on these glasses. It's like you're able to step outside of that frame and see set of frames that you're like, you know.
Seems like there's been quite a resurgence of not just the psychedelic culture, but also multidisciplinary studies trying to put the pieces back together and actually start to look at things and say, well, how does this relate to another thing? We've been pursuing reductionistic methods for so long that we've, you know, gone so far, and, you know, it's all about the individual and the user pays, and we've got to find out how this particular thing's worked, that we forgot that we have to relate it back to how everything else works as well, because otherwise there's no context. It doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah, and that's one thing that is really exciting about this conference, is that academia talks about and aspires to interdisciplinarity very frequently, but it often falls short of that. But psychedelics are a subject that, by definition, breaks down barriers. It's boundary dissolving. You can't talk about psychedelics without talking about it from multiple directions. You can't isolate someone in a sterile medical room. You have to, like, you know, in these studies, they're putting up tapestries and they have music. It's like there's an attention to, like, all these different levels of the experience. And so it's a really, I think, fertile meeting ground for all these different ways of thinking to come together and to really push the boundaries of what we believe that we know about the way that things are.
This is In Psychedelia, and we're chatting to graduate student in the program of Comparative Literature and Literary Theory, and also one of the organizers of the University of Pennsylvania conference, Psychedemia. Here's another track from Emil. It's Fractured Wind. Thank you.
I'm curious, back to the conference itself, how has it been received? Because it is quite a taboo subject, even to this day. Even though there is this resurgence, it's still quite taboo. So how has the conference been received by other academics and students around the university?
I was just tabling for a few hours. There's a club fair, and I was tabling for Psychedemia. And, you know, so we had flyers out for the conference, and we were, you know, talking to people who came by, and just the, you know, person after person coming up and being like, oh, what's this? And just having to repeat myself and say, yeah, like, what's going on over and over again. So that's part of why I'm a little bit frazzled right now.
Did you get a good response from the people that were coming and asking about it?
The vast majority of people that come up are super excited about it. And they're like, what? Like, how is this happening? Like, a lot of people are, like, have like I said, with my, like, I was privately interested in psychedelics, but it wasn't something that I talked to other people about. And some of these people, like, some people, they're not aware of the psychedelic renaissance that's happening. And so they're excited to find out about it. And then, but there are some people, like, for example, someone today came up and she seemed excited at first. She was like, oh, what's this? And I started explaining what it was. And then she was like, she kind of like gasped and was like, oh, I'm in remission, and like hobbled away.
Yeah, I suppose you're going to get a few of those, but if the vast majority are excited, that's a good thing.
Yeah, those are so rare. Like, the amount of resistance I've had to what I'm doing is an indication of the fact that this is the time to be doing this. It's like, you know, there's been so much support and so little resistance that it's been really encouraging for us. But of course, we have to be careful, you know, because the last time that psychedelics were involved in universities, you know, at Harvard in the 60s, there became this, like, zealousness about it, or, like, you know, perceived, you know, people encouraging use without really knowing what's going on. So we're not advocating that people take psychedelics. We're not taking psychedelics ourselves. We're just using psychedelics as a framework for thinking through the possibilities of consciousness and you know, culture and all these bigger questions. So it's dangerous still. There is like a skittishness around it because of the illegality, but we're not in any way advocating anything illegal. We're just trying to have a conversation and really bring back these conversations into the open, because ultimately psychedelics have been a part of human history for as long as there has been recorded history. And so it's only recently that these things have been pushed into, you know, under the carpet.
Yeah.
So there's no activism at this conference. There's no drug policy, like, promotions. We're just trying to look at the facts and look at the science and speculate about what possibilities are and dream and create art and all these things. So, and to put the artists next to the scientists and say, like, how are these different people accessing this experience, and what can we learn about psychedelics from art, from science, and how can these things fit together? So
sounds like a very I'm going to use a big word here, phenomenological kind of way of looking at it. You're trying to look at the subjective experience alongside the sort of more objective science, and put the pieces together, try and understand it from as many perspectives as possible rather than just one discursive way of understanding it.
Exactly. Some psychedelics conferences in the past have been predominantly people who are established psychedelic figures, and they're presenting work that they have already done, ideas that are already public, and it's kind of just presenting information. And what we're doing is it's kind of an experiment, because we're hoping for this to spark something. We're hoping that by putting all these different people together, that something will actually happen that we can't predict. You know, the ideas will cross-pollinate, and we're basically trying to create a fertile soil for, you know, the new wave of psychedelic studies, consciousness studies, to really take root.
And I think that is a fantastic goal as well, and I hope that it does do that. I mean, it sounds, from the way you're describing it, it sounds like it's it is going to do that, because people are going to meet. I mean, just the sheer fact you've got a whole bunch of people with very differing points of view, perhaps, in the one place discussing things with each other and listening to one another, it's inevitably going to end up in some networking at the very least.
Definitely.
Can you tell us about a few of the speakers that you are going to have there?
One thing that we are featuring at this conference is graduate student work. So a lot of people who aren't famous, who aren't well-known for their psychedelic research, but who have new ideas, who are really forging into new territory. And, you know, and I'm excited about the prospect of having a support network where people can get feedback for their work. So in that sense, it's not expected because it's people who aren't well-known to, like, the larger community. There's one person, there's Ken Johnson is speaking at the conference, and he's really interesting because he's a New York Times art critic who just recently came out with a book called Are You Experienced? How Psychedelic Consciousness Influenced Modern Art. And so he's coming at psychedelic art from, like, the high art world, like New York City kind of, like, modern art. But he, his thesis in his book, which is pretty, you know, no one has really said this before, but it seems pretty intuitive to me, that it's almost like the culture itself tripped out in the 60s. So even if, like, individual artists weren't influenced by the actual, like, chemical, there that you can see the influence of psychedelics in art over time.
Absolutely. I think I often watch movies these days and think that it seems to me, and perhaps this is just my perspective, but it seems to me like there's a lot of rather psychedelic concepts and ideas that have seeped their way through into the mainstream and into pop culture, probably from the 50s, late 50s and the 60s and the 70s.
Yeah, definitely. And that, so what's interesting is that we're pairing him in conversation with some of the visionary artists that are associated with the psychedelic culture today, because he doesn't mention any of those in his book. He's talking only about these more well-known artists, because the visionary artists are not really accepted by the art world. And so I'm really curious to see what happens to have this art critic who is interested in psychedelics and art, and then these visionary artists. And also George Quasha, who's one of my mentors, he's also speaking in that art dialogue, and he's a little bit against visionary art, I guess, because he thinks that the visionary art movement, as it currently stands, like the festival art movement, is very representational. Like, you look at images, and he describes it as almost like you're looking at someone painting what they saw on their trip, whereas, like, his art, like, he's interested in how psychedelics can, like, it's like the art experience itself is this psychedelic unfolding of mind, and so you might end up with just a few, like, squiggles on a page rather than something that's identifiable as, like, oh, this is a third eye chakra opening, you know. So there's a lot of, like, new age motifs that are in the visionary art that he feels like is getting away from the actual core of visionary experience, which you can actually engage with directly through artistic practice.
It's funny, this was on the sort of New Age imagery, and this a lot of commonalities in the way that people sort of represent their experience. I've been thinking a lot about this lately, and it almost feels to me like there's some kind of neogenesis going on in the psychedelic community, where there's people that have stories that have almost turned into fables, which are almost accepted as fact, and a lot of these come from the New Age camp. And it almost feels like sometimes it's creating a sort of a psychedelic dogma, almost. How do you feel about that?
Terrence McKenna is a big part of that. You know, the self-transforming machine elves and the DMT hyperspace. You know, so a lot of people came to Terrence McKenna before they came to DMT. And so the question is, like, how much has Terrence McKenna shaped people's DMT experiences? And and the other thing is, there's almost like a codified, like, aesthetic of, you know, this is, it's like the dogma is a good word for it, like something that, you know, is something that is kind of gets away from the heart of the matter and is more of a reference than the actual thing itself.
Exactly. So, yeah, it seems more like what you often see with any subculture. It starts developing its own fashion, its own style of doing certain, of creating certain art, its own styles of music, and then people that come into it later come to sort of expect that that's sort of the a priori thing. That's the thing that happened before the subculture, but it's the other way around. That has just arisen because people liked it at a certain time, and then other people come in. You know, it's funny. It's a cyclical sort of relationship, I suppose. It feeds back into itself.
And I actually like looking at visionary art from a different perspective. It's also those codified symbols and signs. They're also doing, it's like a performance from a different perspective. It's a collecting people who are drawn to a similar kind of experience. So it's almost like it's like the art is performing a function in its rigidness, maybe, that brings people together in a way that's enabling something to unfold that is more than just that art. Absolutely. So it's almost like a signpost to this gathering tribal consciousness, perhaps.
It is. I think when people start to discuss things in any way, whether it be through showing art or playing music, or and somebody else goes, well, that sounds like something, or seems like something that I might have seen before, or they've got a similar background, it feels very unifying. It's a sort of an experience of solidarity with your brothers and sisters, or whatever. Before we finish up, Psychedemia has its own podcast that's being produced. Will you be recording some of the conference talks and putting them up on this?
Yeah, definitely. We're actually we're going to be also videotaping the entire conference, and there's going to be a documentary made from all of the footage. So there's going to be the full footage available, and kind of like highlights an overview of what the conference experience was. So people will definitely, we're hoping for this to be a way to definitely disseminate ideas to a larger audience than just the people who can come to Philadelphia next weekend.
Fantastic, because I know that in Australia, in the US, the community seems a lot more coherent and cohesive than in Australia, where we have got things like Entheogenesis Australis, but we're dispersed across a big country, and don't often get together as much and get to discuss things. So it'll be good for people across Australia to see what you guys are doing in Pennsylvania and at the university. So where can people go to find more information on Psychedemia?
Well, psychedemia.org is our website, and so that's like the main place where you can go to all of the different, access the schedule and see who's speaking, and link to the podcast. But there's also facebook.com/psychedemia is our Facebook page, so
Excellent. People
can also connect there. But I wanted to comment briefly on your what you said about how you thought the United States community was more cohesive than the Australian community. Was that what you said?
Yeah.
Because it's interesting that you said that, because I said the exact opposite. Like, when I came to Australia, I was so... Okay, because like, in the United States is really big. And especially on the East Coast, like, there's not really... Like, this is kind of... Like, there's Alex Gray in New York City. He has his Chapel of Sacred Mirrors, COSM, in New York State. But there's not a huge, like, center for psychedelic culture the way that there is, say, in San Francisco. So there is that cohesiveness there. And there are kind of hubs, like Burning Man, for example, that draw people together. But I, like, on the East Coast, there wasn't really very much going on. So this is kind of a big move for the East Coast too, because it's actually enabling for a more cohesive community to develop here.
Perhaps I suppose, although we've got a big country, we've got far fewer people, so maybe we all seem to know each other. I go 2,000 kilometers up the coast, and I see people that I've seen a couple of times that year, and yeah, I suppose that does make sense. Just my perspective, I suppose.
At EGA, I just got this sense that people were really, people seem to be really almost behind the same movement, whereas I don't get that sense as much in the United States. Like, there seem to be a lot of like movements happening simultaneously, but it doesn't seem to be so like tightly knit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. I can sort of see that now. I'm interested. One day I'll have to make my way over to the United States and see what it's like over there for myself. It'll be very interesting, I think. I'll make sure to put the links up for Psychedemia on the website in psychedelia.podomatic.com. And thank you for joining us on in Psychedelia, Neshe.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you to all the contributors in this episode. Remember to check the website in psychedelia.podomatic.com and the Facebook group for further details on the artists played and the people spoken to. We are looking to grow. In Psychedelia wants you to be part of this growth. In particular, we need content to make sure the podcast is interesting and diverse each week. If you make something or do something that can be recorded, then do it and send it. Or if you have friends or family who might have something, send them a link to the podcast and let them know about it. I know we're a talented bunch of people. Let's share that with each other.